Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is an ugly, rainy Tuesday, and it's going to be an ugly, rainy Wednesday, but then it'll be a nice Thursday and Friday in the weekend, and we'll look forward to that. And look, it's November 12th. I know we had a lot going on, but Thanksgiving will be here before you know it. And as I said, if you're a turkey, I would start putting my affairs in order. Ramon Antonio Vargas joins us now, editor and reporter at The Guardian. As he always does, talk about the latest in the archdiocese and the sexual abuse case. Also, this news that the archbishop sent in his letter of resignation, as he was required to do by canon law. Let's take it one step at a time. First of all, good morning, Ramon. How are you?
Good morning. I am well. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. I'm dry, at least for now. Let's talk about, before we get to the archbishop and his letter and so forth, what did they agree to release in terms of files and so forth, and how does that fit into the context of this whole legal suit and maneuvering and so forth?
Yeah, so obviously they're still miles and miles apart on the monetary terms for, you know, how much victims of the clergy abuse scandal are going to be paid with respect to the bankruptcy case that the church filed, the local church filed here in 2020. But they have come to terms on kind of some non-monetary terms, which we have seen in other church bankruptcies, several dozen across the country. There is a model for what they agreed to in New Mexico, where the Archdiocese of Santa Fe, if I'm not mistaken, agreed to release these kind of clergy personnel files that would outline, assuming that they're all complete, that would outline what the how the church handled the careers of abusive priests and deacons. And they released it to a university out there. I believe it's the University of New Mexico, if I'm not mistaken. And then there's been a similar agreement here. And keep in mind, there's many other terms to which they've agreed, but that struck everyone probably as the most notable one. A lot of the other terms, non-monetary terms, are, in my reading, things that the church has already kind of promised to be doing in the wake of the kind of that charter in 2002, when in an earlier kind of like boiling point of the worldwide clergy abuse scandal was hit in the wake of revelations of systemic abuse and cover up in Boston. And really just kind of reiterates, you know, we're going to continue to do this. We're going to continue to improve on doing it. And there's just kind of promises that to this point, they haven't entirely kept, according to the reporting that I have done, in collaboration with, my friend and partner at WWL-TV, David Hammer.
So let me ask you this before we get any further into this. If the Archdiocese of New Orleans had wanted to, there was already a model in existence in New Mexico where they could have just gone along with that. Accurate?
It was, you know, it's only a couple of years old, right? And then also keep in mind that when that archive was kind of created and agreed to as part of a bankruptcy settlement there, right? And the bankruptcy primarily filed to dispense of clergy abuse litigation. Yes, I mean, I guess like that commitment was sort of made in the same context. It's also not something that You know, that one I think is probably more less kind of charter territory than some of the other measurements, which are, again, like just kind of copy pasting a lot of stuff that's already in the, you know, reporting crimes when you come across them, not letting you know, a policy recommitting to a policy, which, you know, is in place to not be alone with children, et cetera. Right. I think that some of the other, some of the other promises that kind of like pad out the length of that agreement, should have been followed. And in fact, have been exposed to have not been followed in many cases. I think that, you know, the reason that one stands out is that you've really only seen it in New Mexico. And the idea is that it is a publicly accessible thing that survivors and journalists and just, you know, maybe congregants who are deciding what, how they want to, you know, to whom they've donated, et cetera. They can, you know, you can go in and kind of see how any particular, you know, clergy abuser was, how their career was managed by the church. So, that is less charter territory than I think some of the other things in that agreement.
I'm sorry. So I'm reading a story here. It says the archdiocese would have 30 days from any agreement to select a university to archive the previously secret clergy personnel files. A website would then offer access to the archive, and any clergymen who were omitted from the credibly accused list but had at least three abuse claims naming them in the bankruptcy would have their personnel file archived. I guess what I'm wondering, and that would, that, what you wrote there, that mirrors what they did in New Mexico or not? Or?
Yes, there is an archive that is similar to that, if not identical to that, already in place in New Mexico. We reported on it. We spoke to the Archbishop, the Guardian in a series last year, spoke to the Archbishop there, Jason, our contributor Jason Berry did, spoke to the Archbishop who kind of created that archive, and obviously won some accolades for, you know, the transparency. You know, he said that, you know, the church didn't collapse in on itself when we released kind of some of the more, you know, shameful episodes of our past for people to kind of comb over. Of course, if you'll remember this list in 2018 that named some of these clergy abusers here, right? What happened with that was immediately there became a fight over how complete it was, who was left out, et cetera. Mm-hmm. To be clear, in New Mexico, they have run into that, right? Where it's like there have been arguments over how complete the files have been, how they withheld some, et cetera. So, you know, just if past this prologue, that's something to kind of monitor moving forward. Obviously, we've discussed an episode, you know, we've discussed here on this program repeatedly, an episode in which an attorney was fined $400,000, Richard Trahant, for after there was some reporting in the media about a chaplain at Brother Martin High School who had admitted to sexually inappropriate behavior with a teenage girl.
This is Paul Hart we're talking about, to be clear, right?
Paul Hart.
Yeah, and yes, I knew the guy. That's why I'm saying that. He's deceased,
yes,
correct?
Yes, the late Paul Hart. And so ostensibly, right, so that was so remember, that reporting, even though neither Richard Trahan nor his clients had anything to do with, like, the media, you know, provided the information to the media that reported it, they were removed, right? They were removed from So Trahan was fined $400,000. Some of his and his colleagues' clients were removed from participation in a committee that represents the interests of clergy abuse claimants in the bankruptcy, right? Ostensibly, all that stuff is going to eventually be made public. And I think, obviously, probably a sore point among them that, like, okay, so now you're going to release something that was kind of used as a cudgel to remove clergy abuse claimants from participating in a committee advocating for their interests and to find their attorney, you know, but for now, I mean, despite probably some of that soreness, that is something that both sides have agreed to do. They're going to accept that as a non-monetary kind of relief measure. The clergy abuse survivor side, and then that is a concession that the church has agreed to make.
Why get a university involved with an archive? What am I missing here, Ramon?
I think the idea is that it's just also like curated and handled probably by a outside thing. I believe, you know, in New Mexico, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, I'll be curious to see. I mean, it's a public university, I believe, that is curating kind of that archive. It is not a parochial university institution, Catholic institution. So there's probably some like level of like, okay, like this is something that we're kind of like turning over to be, like our documents to be like turned over to outside of our control, outside of our purview, right? Obviously they're providing the documents, they call whichever documents go in. In theory, at that point, that archive isn't going to be residing at like the administrative offices on Walmsley, right? So again, it's a matter of like making it more accessible and making it more, to the extent that anybody, I mean, again, it remains to be seen which university is going to ultimately get it, right? If it's a Catholic university, you know, I guess that'd be something to note. If it's a public university, right, maybe, you know, to the extent that is a public university maybe a more welcoming environment to someone who was a clergy abuse victim, or, you know, has a clergy abuse victim loved one, a survivor loved one. That is, that seems to be my read of that. Right. So, and in, I will confirm as we speak, I believe, the archive in New Mexico that kind of plowed the ground on this is, was at a public university as opposed to like a Catholic university.
I guess what I'm wondering, if the idea behind this is transparency, accurate, why would you even bring somebody else? Why would you bring another party into it? Why not release it directly to, for example, the media?
Presumably it will be, right? I mean, presumably, like, that's something that, like, the media can access. It's something that everyone can access, right?
But the raw data.
And just to confirm, it was established at the University of New Mexico, which is, like, their state university, right? I'm sorry, you had just asked me?
Well, I was just saying, the raw data, why not just release that to the media if the idea is transparency? Why even, and I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist here, but why even put some another party in the chain?
I don't really have an answer directly to that. I do, you know, presumably that is going to be a publicly, I mean, the idea is that it's publicly accessible, you know, wherever those things physically reside, you know, everyone will be able to access that.
Will the plaintiff's attorneys have access to monitor these records to see what goes into the archive, what doesn't? Is somebody going to have access to this?
Well, I mean, yeah, I there is a set of people that know kind of what's been turned up, right? And mm-hmm. There's a lot of these documents are in the possession of law enforcement, right? So one of the things that... Not to tip our hands, such as it were, right? I mean, obviously, one of the first things you're going to be, like, looking at is, I mean, I personally have been able to, you know, obtain some of these clergy personnel files that were, you know, kind of shielded from public view once the bankruptcy was filed. I mean, one of the first things I'll be doing is comparing set A, which are the ones that are, you know, in already out there, versus, like, set B, which is whenever... and to see, like, is it a one-to-one comparison? Were some things left off? Like, obviously, and again, in New Mexico, right, there have been allegations of that, you know, there things that should be in there aren't in there. And so it very echoes very much so the argument about, like, well, this person should have been on the list and they weren't on the list back in 2018, and I do expect to be having some of those conversations once this is made public.
Tell me about the state police investigation that's ongoing, and I know that sometimes state police won't comment on an ongoing investigation.
Sure.
If any of this information that's being released will not be released because it is part of that ongoing state police investigation.
No, I mean, that's a fair question, and that's, like, a good point. Obviously, you know, we don't really have a lot of clarity as to whether, you know, okay, well, we don't have a lot of clarity as to, you know, we've certainly seen things withheld because, you know, they're part of a law enforcement investigation, et cetera. So again, like, that could be something that factors into discussion about, well, you know, there's not that many files, you know, that are in there. I mean, there's obviously some people who are beyond prosecution, right? Because they're dead, because of whatever. Other people are not beyond prosecution, and presumably those are, you know, I can say that that state police investigation is ongoing. You know, obviously no one's been charged at the, you know, certainly we're all waiting for a trial of, you know, admitted serial abuser and retired priest Lawrence Hecker on December the 3rd, where that's tentatively scheduled. Then remains to be seen whether it moves forward. Obviously, he's been charged. You know, you've got a priest and I guess a suspended priest and removed priest in Pat Watney who pleaded guilty in 2023.
Yep.
Excuse me?
I know him too. Go ahead.
Yes, yes. And so we know, so those, they have been charged as kind of law enforcement's been swirling kind of on the perimeter of the stuff. But obviously nobody above them has been charged in connection with any of the allegations of covering up and things like that that are on the record in sworn police documents. But for now, that's kind of where the situation stands. I do have reason to think that it is not on the back burner, but these things move slowly.
Real quick before I let you go, Archbishop Amond turned 75 today, I think it is, and he sent a letter to the Pope, as was required by canon law, as I understand it, saying that he was retiring because that was a mandatory age, offered to stay on through the bankruptcy. I don't know, would him staying help things? Would him leaving help things? What do the plaintiff's attorneys say, and what do the defense attorneys say? Do you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, you know, I think that you're going to get opinions across the spectrum on that. The thing that struck me the most was I think that probably at the beginning of 2023, end of 2022, obviously this is a date that people have had circled on their calendars for a while, right? And I think that it was, you know, there was a thought that it was inevitable that they were going to let him stay on. We've seen archbishops stay on well past their mandated retirement age. We saw the Archbishop of Boston just recently step down at 80, right? That's 5 years beyond the retirement age. I think that what struck me the most in his letter when he kind of told his, and I'm talking about Archbishop Amond here, told his priests and deacons, like, hey, I'm filing kind of my retirement papers as mandated by church law. It's up to the Pope from here. I've asked to stay on. It's up to the Pope from here. That's all technically correct. I think at one point it would not have surprised me to kind of be like, look, I have assurances that I fully expect to stay on beyond this date. And, proceed because I'm going to be around. It was interesting to kind of see the admission of like what happens next really isn't up to me, right? There's no indication that he's not going to be allowed to stay on through the end of the bankruptcy, right? There's a lot of, I mean, it's a difficult situation for someone who hasn't been inside, who hasn't been there to promote someone in that kind of environment or to bring someone, even harder to see bringing someone from the outside to come in with such a expensive, contentious bankruptcy as we've documented here on this program. It's a difficult situation for like a replacement to inherit. But then again, to kind of, that concession struck me as like, but really it's up to the Pope from here. And it's been a privilege kind of, no matter what happens, was kind of the tone of the letter. That's what struck me, because I don't think that if he had turned 75 in 2022, it would have had the same tone.
It seems to me from a management standpoint, it would make sense to have him here until this mess is cleaned up, and you don't want to bring in a new person under these circumstances. Thank you, Ramon. I appreciate your time and your work as always. We'll talk to you again soon. Ramon Antonio Vargas, editor and reporter at The Guardian. We come back, we'll talk to Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, about dealing with the election. 75 million people voted for President Trump, plus round numbers, 71 million voted for the opposition. We all live in the country and we all need to get along moving forward. 928, back in a flash, WWL.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
I'm Jed Lipinski, and Gone South Season 4 will be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
9:33, 27 till 10. We're very concerned about mental health. We always talk about it every other Tuesday. Dr. Judy Ho, our good friend, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Good morning, Dr. Judy. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. Did you go surfing this morning or not?
No surfing today. No.
Okay,
I'm still adjusting to my trip back. I went on a Disney cruise.
Oh, did you?
With my son. Yeah, he just turned 3, so we celebrated his birthday on the cruise. And actually, coincidentally, or maybe not so coincidentally, I was on the ship when the election results were announced. So I was actually kind of away from some of the mayhem that I came to learn about when I came back, essentially. Everybody seems very up in arms, obviously, about the results and have really strong opinions.
Was that out of California or Florida? I'm just curious, the Disney cruise.
I went out of Florida. We were out of Port Canaveral, so we also went to Disney World. We had a really nice time.
Well, you should have stopped by and said, hey, when you're in the area, let's talk about the election. 75 million plus voted for Donald Trump. 71 million plus voted for Kamala Harris. A couple of 100,000 voted here or there. We all live in this country together. I'm seeing notices and people about talking about meltdowns here, meltdowns there, obviously not on the winning side, but on the losing side. What would you say as a clinical and forensic neuropsychologist to people about just, look, this is all one country and we all need to get along from this point? What would you say?
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously people have very extreme feelings about this. I mean, there are people who are saying, well, that's it, I'm leaving this country. I mean, but how feasible is that for the majority of people? And we have to kind of come back down to earth now that we've had our emotional showdown, if you will, because, you know, we're all allowed to have it. You can be upset about it. You can have really strong feelings. But at the end of the day, you also have to know how to move on. And I think we have to just start picking up the pieces and thinking about the things that we can control and the things that we can't. So one of the things that I think is helpful to remember is that we do have checks and balances in this country. So if you are somebody who was not happy with the election results, know that there is other people involved and that the Constitution built it that way so that it's not going to be one person making all the decisions if you really do not like our incoming president. But also, I think that it's important to step away from the political discussions for a while. You know, this is not ignoring whatever problem you think still might need to be solved, but so much of this is out of our control. You've done your part. You've voted. You've talked to people about it. You've made your expressions and your opinions known. And now it's really about knowing, you know, being wise enough to know the things that you can actually control to make your life better and to protect your mental health, and the things that you just have to let go because you do not have control over certain things.
I think the people that voted for Donald Trump have to realize that it's not a dictatorship. It is a democracy, that there are a lot of people that did not vote for Donald Trump. I think the people that did not vote for Donald Trump need to realize that we do have a constitution and it is a democracy, and that you follow the rules of the election, and that Donald Trump won the election and he won the popular not only did he win the Electoral College, he won the popular vote. So that says something about the way that the country has decided that it wants to go. So I think both sides have to be respectful of the other, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously, your advice is very, very wise. I think that there are some people who are probably thinking, well, that's easier said than done. They're still so upset about it. But like you said, you know, the people have spoken. We have a democracy, you know. And there have been many, many other close calls in our nation's history. And so people are going to have strong feelings when it's polarizing candidates, when there's close calls. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons. There's always a winner and there's always a loser, the way that it's built, you know. And I do think that, you know, to your point, it's important now to think about practically what are the things that we can do to protect our inner peace. You know, if you really think you can move out of the country and that's going to be your answer, great. I can't move out of the country, even if that was my decision or my thought. I think that, you know, for a lot of people who have voted one way or another, they might say, well, you know, I'm going to leave the country. And it's like, even if that was my position, I don't think that that's practical to move my entire family out of the country. So, like, instead of, like, continuing to fantasize about that, if this is how you feel, maybe it's better to think a little bit about, you know, well, what are the day-to-day things that will make me feel better about what's going on? And you have to remember, we have a lot of power in our local government. And I talk to a lot of people, you know, again, on both sides, you know, as I mentioned to you, Tommy, my husband and I actually are not necessarily on the same side in this particular election. And so but there's a lot that you can do to be involved in your local government, in your city government, in your state's government. That's why we have states. That's why we have state policies. So if this is something that's lighting a fire under you, then get involved. We all have a way to get involved. One easy way is just to start attending your city council meetings. They're all open meetings, right? Mm-hmm. Or you can write your senator, write your congressman. There's a reason why those things exist. Do you remember doing that, Tommy? I remember in school, we were encouraged to write our congressmen and congresswomen, you know, about whatever issue we wanted to write about. And I think that was like as young as the third grade. So we have a template for it, but we're not activating that as much. And maybe if you feel like you want to do something more active about it, that's another way to go to feel like there's things that are a little bit more under your control.
All right, let me take a break. I'm getting a text from people talking about dealing with it with their kids and also dealing about mixed households where they canceled each other's vote out and living on from here. We'll talk about all that when we come back. Dr. Judy Ho, our guest, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. I'm no clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, but I think if you're upset, you need to just take a breath. If you're happy, you need to take a breath and not rub it in anybody's face. I just think you got to be polite to everybody. 940, 20 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 9:46, 14 till 9, back with Dr. Judy Ho in a second. Tommy Tucker, WWL, our news director, Dave Cohen, joins us with some breaking news. Dave?
A federal judge, Tommy, in Baton Rouge has issued a temporary injunction banning Louisiana from requiring public schools to post the Ten Commandments in classrooms. The state plans to immediately appeal, but for now, the Ten Commandments cannot go up. The judge says that it is unconstitutional. We have more on our website at WWL.com, and we'll have a report at the top of the hour in the news.
All right, thank you, Dave. Back to Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. I'm getting texts from people here saying their kids have expressed suicidal ideologies, etc. How would you again, I said everybody needs to take a breath here. Just everybody, just relax. I know, you know, it's like you get all wound up and then after it's over and then you look back 4 years later and it's like, well, that was kind of silly to get that wound up. Tell me what would you tell kids or parents to tell their kids?
Yeah, you know, I really like what you said right before the break, which is like, you know, no matter what, like, just take a breath, you know? Everybody is just even if you were on whatever, quote unquote, the winning side, you know, stop rubbing it in people's faces. You know, there's divided households. There's a lot of people who have different opinions. And that's reflective of my household. Everybody voted a different way, including my extended family. So I think in terms of how to help your children, we have to take them seriously whenever they say that they're having suicidal ideation. You know, sometimes I think parents, it's hard for them to absorb that. So they'll say, no, that's not what you mean. There's no way you think that way. And that can feel dismissive. So you got to just open your ears and no matter what you feel personally, just say, okay, well, that's concerning. Can you please tell me more about what you mean by that? You know, you have to just ask them questions, even if it sounds like you're pestering, even if it sounds like you're annoying them, because that's how you're going to get to the bottom of it and then learn how you can actually help them. So take it seriously, ask the questions that you need, and then ask them, you know, what can I do to help you with that? So let them come up with some ideas first, and then you should suggest some ideas as the parent. Like, okay, well, do you want to go talk to somebody? Would you like me to go with you to a counselor and we can see if that will be helpful? Do you want to talk to another trusted adult about this? If you don't really want to talk to me about it, is there another person, a teacher, extended family member, a coach that you'd feel more comfortable talking about this with, right? But make sure that they feel supported and make sure to continue to check in, because no matter what happened in this election, suicidal ideation is increasing among our young population. And so it is really important to address it at the root and to not dismiss them in the process, no matter what your feelings are.
What about respecting each other's opinions? Because I'm getting texts here calling each other idiots and each other snowflakes when, in fact, both of the people that are texting here on either side are kind of snowflakes and engaging in name-calling, and they'd be the first one to call the other one out for getting their feelings hurt. However, they'd get their feelings hurt just as quickly. A quick word on that, Dr. Judy?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's try our best to refrain from the name-calling. I think it's just something that we do sometimes because we want to feel secure in our position. But I honestly don't think that there's a specific right or wrong here. It's just your personal opinion. So let's try to keep it as civil as possible. Remember the importance of the relationship of the person that you're speaking to. And if it's important, then really value them and don't dismiss them and make fun of them for their opinions.
Somebody texted in and said, I'm a concerned voter. I've always been told that turnabout is fair play. Well, I guess you can look at it that way. I think you can always look at it as, okay, mutually assured self-destruction. I don't know if you're married to somebody that canceled out your vote, and you know, you're looking at it as it's going to be a long 4 years of living with this other person. I guess you can, as you said, if you want to move out of the country, you can decide to get divorced. However, maybe, you know, and we're going to go in here in a minute, but maybe we can leave it talking about this with, you know, getting along with your significant other, if this is enough to tear your relationship apart, maybe it's not as strong as you thought it was, or maybe you're greatly overvaluing the election and not paying attention to what is valuable with your relationship, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, again, you know, if this is going to completely rip your relationship apart, then you need to look at what that foundation was in the first place. And if you do value your relationship with this person, then find a way to have a civil discussion. My husband and I have been on separate sides. We've been on the same side. You know, we have really seen it all. I've always found that it's so much more important just to start from a place of they have a reason. They have a rational reason for why they're supporting this candidate or this position. You know, I know my husband is an intellectual and intelligent person. I respect him in general as a person. I may not agree with his opinions, but if you respect your spouse, remember that most people have a very strong reason for why they're supporting a specific idea. And they believe in that idea. So try to be more curious about it. Like, hey, you know, tell me more about why you feel that way. And then in terms of how to get along, if you're on opposite sides the next 4 years, I think if you need to refrain from discussion sometimes, that's fine. Other times, if you are going to engage in discussion, you should probably set some ground rules ahead of time. Like, hey, no name calling, no trying to change each other's opinion, but let's just try to find out more information. I want to hear more from you why you feel this way, and then I'll tell you the same from my side. And then we kind of just move on, go to dinner, do an activity that helps bond us again. I think that it's important to set up those rituals and those rules in advance.
And maybe just on either side, stop for a second and think, maybe you aren't absolutely totally right. Just possibly.
Oh, my
gosh.
Can you imagine?
Maybe.
Is it possible?
Maybe none of us are absolutely, totally right. Thank you, Dr. Judy. Appreciate your time as always. Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Quick break.
O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.